bill to tweak the Our Care, Our Choice Act is advancing at the state legislature. The pandemic highlighted access to physicians for the end-of-life program. Advocates say the need to allow nurses to prescribe medicines needed for the end-of-life care is still an issue in rural areas. Charlotte Charfin is a Big Island doctor with Life and Death Wellness, a nonprofit community resource. She talked with us about a recent experience with a patient who died earlier this month. He had a prescription for end-of-life care, but was not able to use it.
Being an emergency physician, that is the world I live in, of life and death. And I'm not saying it's easy, because it's definitely not easy, and every one of them are certainly different. But it's really, it's so hard to describe, but it's really, I'm just honored. I'm honored to be a part of that part of someone's life, because I think it does scare a lot of people, right? And that's not what it does to me.
So you are one of two Big Island providers who can help to write prescriptions.
Actually, I think we may now be up to three in 2021, from what I understand. So now you've got at least one doctor represented. I'm in the North Kohala or the North Hawaii area, but I've helped people all over the entire island because there was such a lack. Now there is a physician that I know of in Kona that has written a prescription, and I do believe we have our first physician down in the Hilo area that has written one prescription this year.
And you were with a patient, actually, I think it was the first one who signed up for this, correct?
Kaiser actually has a great system in place. So any Kaiser patient stays within the Kaiser family. They have a specific physician. They have, you know, nurse or navigators. And so I believe the Kaiser patients probably were the first ones on the island. I think I did have the first patient outside of the Kaiser system come to me. So I was the first doctor that lives on the Big Island to write a prescription, because the doctors in Kaiser are actually on Oahu.
And can you tell us a little bit about this patient's situation?
Sure. You're talking about the first patient?
Yeah, the one who you were just with.
Yeah. I've been with him now for a year and a half, so I can tell you a lot about his situation. We met because his primary care physician and because his specialist doctor both said, no, I cannot be a part of this. The primary care doctor, it sounded like he was actually for it, but he was in a system that he thought didn't allow him to participate, which was actually not accurate. The specialty doctor just flat out basically said, no, I want no part of this. And so I got a phone call on my office line, and the patient found me because I have a big sign out in front of my office that says Life and Death Wellness. That's my nonprofit. And he figured I must know something about this law. And so the phone call I got was him explaining his situation, that he had a metastatic terminal cancer, and that he had asked his physicians for help, and none of them would help him, and that he felt abandoned, and that he was hoping I would at least have a conversation with him. I listened to that phone call, and first thing I did was, I remember I was in my living room, I sat down and I cried. And I cried for two reasons. First was because it just broke my heart that this man had trusted physicians that either weren't allowed or didn't think they were allowed or just weren't going to participate. And then the second reason was, I was like, oh, wow, I'm really now being asked to do something that I do support. But before, it was all theoretical, right? I'd never done it before. And now I was actually being asked to go through the process. So I was a little nervous and also honored. And so anyway, I did call him back pretty immediately. And he said, so how's this going to work? You know, you write me a prescription and say, go have a nice death. And I laughed at him and said, absolutely not. If I'm going to do this, I've got to get to know you. I've got to understand you. I've got to talk to you. I've got to spend a lot of time with you. And he said, oh, this sounds great to me. And the first day we met, I kid you not, I spent almost 5 hours with this man. And granted, I don't do that with every patient now, but it was my first one. And I wanted to know him. And I spent most of the time actually just getting to know him as a human being. I mean, we talked about the law and we talked about the reasons and why, but that was such a small part of our first conversation. And so that was the introduction to him.
Explain to our listeners, so he got the medication, but he was never able to use it.
Correct. So he got the medication a year and a half ago. So he outlived his prognosis, first of all. So, you know, under the law, it's 6 months or less. And he clearly, by his scans, by all of his medical records, by everything that I saw charted, he certainly qualified for the law, and his consulting physician also believed that as well. But this was an interesting individual. Something happened when he got that prescription, and that's what he would tell you. It was almost like he said, I finally started to live. So for him, he accepted hospice, which he was a very private individual, and he wasn't really sure about letting other people into his home. But that's also part of the law. It's encouraged. You don't have to be in hospice, but it is encouraged. And so I did encourage that. And he started getting all of these extra benefits that I don't think he realized he was going to get. I also introduced him to end-of-life doulas, which a lot of people maybe don't even understand what that is, but I think of them as coaches for people at the end of their life, kind of like a birthing doula, but they can be with you a lot longer than just the very end. And so he started accepting help as this very independent man that didn't, you know, that he didn't want to die in an institution. He didn't want to be a burden. He wanted to go out in his own kind of way. But what I found with him was, he started embracing life even more. And this is a man that loved life. I mean, there was one point he told me, even if I'm in my bed and I can't get out of my bed, if I can smell the oranges, there's still joy in my life. And so he thrived for a very long time in hospice with a lot of care around him that I don't know otherwise he would have found had he not actually chosen to go through the process. And it wasn't until probably about the last month that his disease really took a shift, right? And you also have to also remember he's been pretty isolated because of COVID. So all of the support was really not as, you know, once COVID started, not as many people are coming into his home. Thank God for hospice, really, because that was the backbone of his support through a lot of this. But anyway, his disease about a month ago did start to change, but it changed acutely to a point where he was no longer mentally capable to make the decision to use his medication. And that, a lot of people were like, oh no, that's a terrible thing. Well, what it did open up was something I never imagined. I never imagined how much our community would come together to support this man, because he didn't have family on island. He lived alone, and he had very little money. And so the question was always going to be, if he got in that state, which he didn't want to be in, right? But if he got there, what was going to happen? It took 19 days. Basically, we supported him for 19 days before he finally took his last breath very peacefully.
Wow. I mean, that's what a community does, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it was a small community. And, of course, keeping his information private. So a lot of people didn't even know who the person was, but we started a GoFundMe. So we had a lot of money donated just because we have now a North Kohala Community Caregiving Fund specifically for people just like him who are, you know, who may not have the support of family or friends or the monetary ability to pay for somebody to come in. And then hospice, interesting enough, hospice, you know, our Northway Hospice is amazing. I love working with all the hospices, but I work a lot closer with them because that's part of where I live, and I also volunteer for them. But they were able to use some of their funds to support paid caregivers. I found out later, because of there's a private donor, and because she had seen how hard it is for people to access the Our Care, Our Choice Act on our island, she made a private donation to our hospice to help support those patients. So he ended up qualifying for that, to actually not to get his medication, but to actually get more paid caregivers in. So between paid caregivers, funds from hospice, from what we were able to raise as a nonprofit, and then from volunteer end-of-life doulas in our community, we managed to keep him in his home. And that was no small feat. I mean, there were plenty of times I just didn't think we were going to be able to pull it off, and that he was going to end up institutionalized, isolated because of all the COVID restrictions, and dying very much alone. And that did not happen. And I am so grateful for that.
And you mentioned COVID. What's been your experience with COVID in hospice?
With COVID in hospice, of course, they have to be very careful, right? And so the biggest thing I've seen is where we've had really robust volunteers in the past that go in, they do a lot of respite care. That's really not as possible. I mean, there's still volunteers out there, and luckily he had a few that were able to come in through hospice. That's really decreased the amount of people you can bring into the home. And of course, they always still have to, you know, fully masked, that kind of thing. And so it was a challenge with him because we had multiple caregivers coming in, right? We had, that was the only way he was going to stay there. And that for him was really important as far as connection too. This is a man that loved connection. Even though he was very independent, being connected to other humans was so very, very important. And you're not going to get that in, say, a nursing home, right? I mean, you'll have a few of those caregivers, but it's just so, his experience was just so much different from what I think a lot of people that are dying, you know, institutionalized or in hospitals are having. You know, as an emergency physician, I'm so very much grateful for the people that are in the ICUs, the nurses, the doctors, and the emergency departments that are really getting hard hit with that, being there and holding these dying people's hands because their families aren't able to in a lot of the situations.
We've been listening to Dr. Charlotte Charfin, who helped a patient live out his final days. She supports a bill to allow nurses in remote areas to write prescriptions under the Our Care, Our Choice program and to reduce the mandatory waiting period. The Senate Judiciary Committee is to vote on the bill tomorrow morning.